All right, welcome to the Retro Game Club podcast. This is season 3, episode 11, also known as Game Club for Workgroups. I am Rob, and with me is someone who will not let Snyder cut our episodes, Hugh.
Yeah, I don't even know what that is. I was complaining that I subscribe to a lot of like tech and gaming and just general nerd sites. Mm-hmm. And about every 7 minutes in my RSS feed, something called Snyder Cut shows up as an article. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what that is. I'm not trying to like be a hipster here. I literally don't know what that is. And I'm trying to figure out how to filter it out of my RSS feed. Is it a haircut? I mean, is it a literal? No. Okay.
No, it's literally just a movie that was not great that this one director recut. I don't know if it was his original cut or whatever. Listeners, don't write us because I really don't care. I try to watch it because we pay for HBO Max, and I almost never watch HBO Max. So I was like, well, there's this thing people are talking about. But I was exhausted. I fell asleep like 15 minutes into it. So
that's a really ringing endorsement of whatever
that is. Usually when the TV turns on, I instantly fall asleep. So
yes, I recently started paying for Peacock because all the pro wrestling stuff is on there now, except for things that are now deemed canceled. That's a big controversy in the pro wrestling world, is that NBC has decided, NBC signed this deal to stream WWF content, right? All like historic WWF content. NBC had apparently not seen all historic WWF content prior to this agreement. And they've now realized that, boy, there are some really horrible, horrible things in there.
That's awesome.
So, now it's an interesting trade-off. You know, when it was its own independent network, clearly Vince McMahon is not going to... He didn't censor anything, man. There was like one wrestler that he would put a disclaimer in front of his matches. That was it.
Nice. So what's been going on?
Because I follow also my RSS feeds besides whatever the Snyder Cut is. I follow a lot of sites that cover Falcom news, and one of them, or all of them in the past week, noted that all the recent Falcom games are going over to the Stadia. Yeah, I think all the Stadia owner will be very happy to finally be able to play them.
Yes, you mean the devs? The devs You're that right. are forced to play it?
Yeah, that's about it. But it's cool. I mean, if you don't have a PS3, PS4, or Steam, and you want to try these games, my impression is there's just crazy deals on the Stadia, just trying to entice people to play it. So maybe you can get some of these really cool games for a good price.
Yeah.
You know, it's that's what it. I've not been playing much though. I've been working quite a bit. I've been trying to work on some projects, and I haven't really been very successful. So what have you been up to?
Yeah, same. I haven't been playing too much. Just a little bit of that Nier Automata, but not that much time for non-game club games. I got my first haircut in 14 months. I did have long hair like you, and now it's short again. And the only reason why I'm bringing that up is I forgot how horrible it is to make small talk with people. That's the first time I've had to do that in like over a year. Like, it's different when with people that you work with, you know, because like you're paid for that. But, you know, when I get a haircut, I just kind of like, I'm not trying to, what I'm saying is I have nothing against people who give haircuts, but I just kind of want to be quiet and get a haircut and not be forced to make conversation. I don't know. I forgot about that part of society. So rude awakening there.
Yeah. I've had that, like, I have that experience mostly like in Uber, like if I'm traveling somewhere, because I don't want to get a bad passenger rating. So I'm not sure how much small talk I'm supposed to make with the driver to avoid them declaring me to be a jerk and giving me like no stars. And then other drivers won't pick me up. Some driver gave me like 0 stars. I don't know what I did. Like I literally just sit there and look at my phone the whole time.
In Uber, I always pretty much say like, hey, are you this person? Yeah, cool. Hey, what's up? And if at that point, if they want to keep talking, they keep talking. And then I just agree with literally whatever they say to be as non-confrontational as possible. Because you never know, like this person's kind of in control. They could just crash the car if they want. So I just kind of just agree with everything till I get out of the car. What else have I been up to? Oh, yeah. Want to give a shout out to Synatic on Twitter. He, and along with Jason Scott, helped out our podcast. So if you listen to our, I don't know if it was actual help, but they spent a lot of time with us. So in our last podcast, we had that weird section about Road Blaster's crazy possible Genesis manual.
Right. So to recap, we were trying to find the man. You were trying to find the manual for Road Blasters. You went to a site, a very kind of sketchy site that
is the first result in Google, by the way.
First result in Google. Yeah, I know. Google can point to sketchy things first.
Yeah.
And they had what was, I believe, to be a text copy of the Road Blasters manual. It clearly was not. It was more of like a rambling conspiracy.
Yeah.
It actually referenced, it like had references to Elian Gonzalez, who was born after Road Blasters was released.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I said, that can't possibly be the manual. And yeah, then it turns out Road Blasters on Genesis is a pretty rare game.
At least the manual. Yeah. Yeah. So I wrote Jason Scott of archive.org and his podcast, which I recommend everyone listen to it. Fame and a very nice gentleman. He wrote me back right away. You know, I wrote him saying, like, sorry about this weird email, but here is the story. You think you could, you know, have some of your Twitter followers try to help us out or something? And he wrote back, like, first of all, like, this wasn't even the weirdest email, like, in the past hour, pretty much. Right. but yeah, he helped us out. And one of his Twitter followers had it. And between Zach and Jason, they helped the guy upload the manual to archive.org. And the Genesis manual has absolutely nothing to do with these crazy anarchist manifestos or whatever that was on this website. So,
right, which is good. Now, I did run the Japanese manual through a translator.
Mm-hmm.
And what was kind of cool about that is most of that manual was talking about how Road Blasters was not very popular in Japan. Like, no one ever, like, the arcade cabinet was not a big deal in Japan, or not many people had seen it. So now you finally have a chance to enjoy this game.
Well, that's kind of a cool thing to say. Not a good sale, but maybe it's kind of like, hey, you may have missed this one. Check it out now.
Yeah, that was exactly the premise of the manual. So I'm like, all right, that's good. Very, very good, yeah.
The only other thing is, you know, we were talking about Mario and Luigi being twins, and I did some quick Googling. And listeners, mm-hmm. Feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but it looks like that all started from Yoshi's Island on SNES.
I mean, they're palette swaps. Like, they're literally the same sprite.
But in that, they're brought by the stork at the same time. So it's assumed they're the same age because they look the same age even as babies.
I think they've always been twins. I really do. I mean, kind of like gets into where did Mario's name change from Jumpman to Mario? Like, he's sort of effectively always been Mario, but there's a little bit of time when he was Jumpman and blah, blah, blah. I think this is just like one of these, like, I've always known them to be twins. I think even before Yoshi's Island.
Yeah. I can't remember when I started thinking that way. So, yeah. If there is true canon, I couldn't find it. And I think I found a site that had it, but it was like 1,000 pages long. And I was just like, life's too short to sift through this to find the one sentence I need to find.
Yeah. Now it could be bad memory. You know, like, there's a lot of things that you remember.
Like the Mandela effect kind of thing.
Yeah. Kind of like, there was a podcast I listened to a while ago. What was it called? I can't remember the series now, but it's a series where they explore like weird urban legends and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, they did a bit about when did the term mullet first appear in the English language.
Okay.
Because if you go back and you say, like, how long have people been using the term mullet? I'm describing the hairstyle, not the hair, right? Which I assume is not the haircut you just got.
No.
but the hairstyle, which, again, is, you know, bangs but long and back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Business up front, party in back, I think people call it. And I'm like, oh, well, we just called it that in the 80s, right? Like, it's always been a term. But then if you look into it, like the first recorded instance of it was from like, it's really late, like 1994.
Huh.
Yeah, it's like from a Beastie Boys song. And not like one of their popular songs. Like, this is, you know, past peak Beastie Boys.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. But that could be the same thing with my belief that Mario and Luigi have just always been twins. Maybe it was actually in the Super Nintendo game first, and I just mistakenly remembered always being there as a fact.
Yeah. Hey, could be. Yeah. Mario also needs a mullet, by the way.
I'm surprised there wasn't at least one game, you know, where he did. That's kind of like, that's sort of an interesting topic, like things you believed about games that then turned out to be completely wrong.
I like that idea. I totally like that idea. So if any listeners know for sure, obviously email us, email@retrogameclub.net. And we've been rambling a bit. Should we do some news, I guess?
Yeah, we should do some news. So our first news item was actually our last bit of the last episode, because it was all the way at the end and maybe not everybody listens to the end. So French Pet shared with us an article about reverse engineering Tetris on the NES to add hard drop, meaning where you just press a button and the piece drops instantly to the bottom with a little like outline, basically adding the mechanic that's in the Tengen port of Tetris to the Nintendo port of Tetris.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very good technical article.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah, this is cool. Very cool. Yeah, thanks again, French Pet, for sending that to us.
Nintendo will eventually take this down, so read it now.
And download the patch.
No, yeah. Canceled Game Boy Color game Infinity is going to get finished. It was, I guess, supposed to be a 2001 release. I'm not real familiar with this game, but it looks nice. And, they're going to make it.
It at least. It was going to come out near the end of, right when, Game Boy Advance is coming out. So they just kind of dropped it and focused on that system instead. And, this looks like a pretty good... It doesn't look turn-based. It's definitely an RPG, but it looks more action-y than turn-based.
Yeah, the battle system reminds me of Secret of Mana.
Okay.
I don't know that it is, just from the video, that's what it reminds me of.
Yeah, there's not much you could see. There's only like a few seconds of gameplay in the video. But yeah, this looks cool. So from 20 years ago, coming out new. We've got more Game Boy news here.
Yeah, we've probably never talked about this site before. I don't even think I've heard of it.
Goomba Stomp?
Yeah, Goomba Stomp.
I like that.
This looks like some kind of nerd pop culture site. I see a mix of video games and pro wrestling.
Yeah, I'm trying to see. Yeah, looks pretty legit too. They have a staff and everything. But yeah.
Well, hold on. They do have an article about the Snyder Cut. So it's officially a nerd site.
Pop culture site, yeah. Taken for granted, the Game Boy Advance's Mario Brothers Classic Remake is a franchise gem. So I didn't really know anything about this. Have you played this one?
No, because I'm not big into, like, the original Mario Brothers is it's kind of fun, like, if you're, you know, a friend of mine had this in his basement, and it's not bad if you got, you know, a couple drinks and you're playing some Mario Brothers, like, that's kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not something I normally just fire up on my own.
Yeah. This article says that this was part of all of the Mario Advance games, which I did not know. But the gist of this article is this is more than just, you know, upscaled graphics or something. They added some quality of life stuff, like the movement and stuff like that, and stuff with the pipes and... it's more than just one screen. Like, you can scroll to the right and the left with the shoulder buttons. And, and there's multiplayer with it, too. So it pretty much says, hey, you know, even though this is, like you said, just Mario and not Super Mario Brothers, give it a chance. So, yeah. Maybe I will. Maybe it'll be a Game Club game sometime. And we'll start going to that site more, too.
Yeah, absolutely. It looks like a cool site.
So this next one is something that you said is old news, but I
this
never
is very
heard,
old news. Yeah.
I never heard of this before. So the underworld theme from Super Mario Brothers is a replay of a 1979 Fusion record. And this article also goes on to compare Punch-Out, Legend of Zelda with Deep Purple. What else? The Twilight Zone theme with part of Super Mario Brothers 3, the castle theme. And yeah, it's especially the underworld for Super Mario Brothers. It's pretty right on.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same song. I mean, I read about this. I'm not joking. It's at least 10 years ago. There was another article talking about this. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of video game songs that borrow or rip off music. Sometimes it could just be a coincidence. I mean, there's a song in, I think it's Guile's theme in Street Fighter 2 is possibly a almost complete knockoff of, oh, shoot, I can't remember what song now. Something from Top Gun, maybe.
Nice.
Yeah, you can Google that. Mm-hmm. Guile's theme, it's more or less copied directly from another song. I mean, it could be coincidence, but sometimes it's a little too much coincidence. The Mario Underworld theme in particular seems too similar to be coincidence. It's possible. I don't know. Like, composing music seems really hard. I've attempted to, like, for Genesis demos, and anything I do just ends up sounding like Canon and D, because every song rips off Canon in D, basically. Did you ever hear the, this is off topic here, but have you ever heard the song that Enter Sandman allegedly ripped off?
No, I don't remember that one.
Okay. So there's a song that, at least for the first minute, is identical to Enter Sandman. But it's like, by some band that maybe sold 200 copies of this thing on cassette to, like, their friends and family. Like, it seems pretty unlikely that, you know, Metallica heard it and decided to rip it off. It's possible. You never know. Yeah. They don't really seem like the type that are scouring, like, indie cassettes.
No. But, hey, I mean, there's only so many rhythms and so many notes and keys. And so eventually, you know, things are going to start sounding the same. I mean, literally everything on the radio sounds the same now. So,
right. And the reason I mentioned, like, Canon and D is, like, there's sort of a progression to music, and, you know, if Mario is ripping off something from a 1979 album, that 1979 album is probably also ripping off something earlier than that, and then all the way back to, you know, to Beethoven and Friends.
Yeah, Beethoven and Friends. That'd be a good sitcom.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
All right, what else do we have here? Oh, this strange one.
Okay.
This Kotaku.
Yeah.
There's a Kotaku article about this guy. It links to a YouTube video, which is actually pretty interesting if you watch the video. This guy put Christopher Nolan's movie Tenet on Game Boy Advance, so on one of those movie carts. Mm-hmm. And he explains how he did it, like how he had to choose different scenes and stuff. And and how to convert the video in a way that could actually be read by the Game Boy Advance. So there you go. Pretty interesting, but kind of who cares? Because
the time is good, because Angry Video Game Nerd just did an episode about Shrek on Game Boy, and part of it included the Shrek Game Boy Advance movie.
Nice. Yeah. So kind of topical.
It's 2 frames per second or whatever it runs at.
Yeah. Yeah, we had an article about that a few weeks ago. I can't even remember.
We did, yeah.
Specifics. Have you ever done Zelda's? Have you ever done The Legend of Zelda's second quest?
Probably 20 times.
See, there's this article on ZeldaDungeon.net asking if the second quest is worth playing. And I've actually never played it, just because by the time I've beat The Legend of Zelda every time, I'm like, all right, next game.
Oh, but you can use that save game to start the second. I mean, you can go back to it anytime. I mean, I like it because it's Legend of Zelda, but now stuff is in different locations and the dungeons are a lot harder. Mm-hmm. So if you thought Legend of Zelda was too easy, and after you played it a few times, it kind of is. Mm-hmm. The second quest is a really, really good challenge.
Yeah. Maybe I'll go back and do that. Especially now that this is on the Switch and stuff like that.
Yeah.
We have more Zelda news.
What is this here? Is Link dead in Majora's Mask, or are fans overthinking this? Fans are overthinking it.
I was going to say probably the latter.
Yeah.
I guess the theory of this is Skull Kid killed Link, and that Termina is a purgatory.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, I like but people using their imagination. But
it kind of doesn't fit with Twilight Princess, though, because isn't Twilight Princess, you know, at some point you're fighting, like, you play Twilight Princess, I assume.
No, it's one of the few Zelda games I have not played.
Oh, well, you should get the HD remake or something, man. It's really good.
I ordered it.
Okay. Oh, so you own it, but you just haven't played it?
You could pre-order it.
No, you're talking about Skyward Sword.
Oh, yeah. Then I don't have it. I don't have that yet. There you go.
So I have like three versions of this game because they released it on three systems, mm-hmm. which is kind of rare for a Zelda game. But at some point, Link, this isn't a spoiler because it happens throughout the game. Link is like mentored by like an previous undead iteration of Link.
Mm-hmm.
That's just what it is. And that Link, that previously undead Link, or no, the currently undead Link, is clearly the Link from Majora's Mask.
Okay.
Because he's equipped with the shield that you get in Majora's Mask.
Okay.
Something like that. So it's an interesting... That's the theory, at least.
So this remake was... this HD upgrade was on the Wii U.
Right. I say Switch?
No, I said Switch, let's see.
Right, so Twilight Princess was originally a GameCube game, mm-hmm. but they were developing the Wii at the same time, so they created a Wii version that launched the same time as the GameCube version.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like what happened with Breath of the Wild, right?
Breath of the Wild's
on Wii U and Switch, exact same thing. Yeah. And then they did an HD remake for Wii U, which if you finish it, and you have that save data, then you can get Wolf Link in Breath of the Wild.
What's Wolf Link?
Oh, so Twilight Princess, Link transforms into a wolf.
Is it cool or is it
lame? It's cool. Yeah, it's cool.
Okay.
It's the beginning. In the beginning of the game, you're kind of locked into Wolf Link for a while, maybe longer than you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
But later on, when you play as Wolf, like Wolf Link moves really fast and has, you know, like secret powers and stuff. So it's pretty cool.
So here's what the internets are saying that, I'm talking specifically Switch now, that since you won't be able to buy Mario 3D All-Stars after March 31st, by the way, they're really expensive on eBay already. Mario 35, you can stop playing. You'll have to stop playing that on March 31st too. The theory is that that's when they're ending Mario's 35th birthday and they're going to focus on Zelda. So right after that, they think they're going to launch a lot more stuff, Zelda stuff for Switch, like Twilight Princess and Wind Waker, which would be cool. Very cool.
Yeah, I like both those games. Wind Waker is... it's weird. Like, people complain about the sailing in Wind Waker, and really, that's, like, my favorite part.
Me too. I love it. I love that part.
Yeah. They could just make a whole game where Link is sailing and discovering islands and stuff, and I would play that.
Me too.
Is that what Oceanhorn is?
I don't know that game. Okay. Is that one of the Game Boy Advance games or something?
No, it's a newer game. It's a modern... Well, newer to someone who mostly plays old games.
Okay, yeah. Hackaday. Oh, we have a plugging stuff into Dreamcast segment. Three different articles from this week. Dreamcast controller adapter even works with mice now.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently you can plug in Saturn controllers, PS2 compatible keyboard and mice, and a few other things. Looks like you could do a PS1 and a PS2 controller. Pretty all cool. Right. And then also on Hackaday, all three of these are Hackaday. Wireless 360 controllers now on the Dreamcast. This is a pretty funny article because this is a nightmare mod to do for your Dreamcast.
That's what it says, yeah, that it's horrible.
It's cool when you get it done, but you also lost a big chunk of your life doing it. And it's funny because it requires an FPGA board. And like one of the first comments is on an FPGA board, you could probably just emulate Dreamcast. So like, what are we even doing here?
Yeah, this is purely a, I wonder if I can make this work type of project.
Yeah. Hold my beer kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then the next one, interfacing with the Dreamcast controller with just an Arduino. And I know that's pretty much all it is. So,
all right.
Yeah, that's it. So you could use a Dreamcast controller on an Arduino kind of thing. And all these articles really talk about the Maple Bus on the Dreamcast, which I really don't know what that is, but they say it's really fast and a bit complicated. So that's why all these things are kind of big deals.
Okay.
So there you go. 3 Hackaday articles in 1. Love that site.
All right.
I forgot to group our Zeldas together. We have one more Zelda one.
This is short. Is Zelda an RPG or not? No, it is not. Next, you could run Doom on 16 billion crabs.
Sorry. Yeah. So this one confused me a little bit. I thought this was talking about interfacing with crab brains and using it and creating a network that way or a CPU that way. But this is talking about putting crabs in a, can you explain this? You'll probably do a
well, you're basically recreating a circuit with logic gates using crabs to either open or close the gates on the circuit. And with enough of them, you could run Doom or some other piece of non-trivial software. Although I don't know why you would ever do this.
Yes. I don't even know if that many crabs exist in the wild.
Oh, I'm sure they do. I mean, you count like hermit crabs and stuff? Yeah.
Well, this is a specific type of crab for some reason. But very strange.
How
very, very strange.
Many crabs are on Earth? Yeah. Not how many claws does a crab have? There's almost 7,000 different species of crabs, apparently.
Okay. Yeah, there's got to be a lot.
So 16 billion seems pretty spot on. All right. I actually watched this video about expert Doom players complete challenges once thought impossible. So this is a guide to different completion percentages or challenges in Doom that nobody can do, like 100% on this level. Number of them deal with pacifist runs. So those are runs where you do not kill a single enemy. The enemies, of course, can kill themselves, but you cannot kill any of them. And it details, there's 2 parts. You got to watch the first part. They actually don't recommend, they don't mention it in this article, but the first part explains the impossible challenges. And then the second part actually explains which ones they have since solved and which ones have not been solved and presumably will not be.
Yeah.
Some of them are just like 100% secrets. There are some levels where there's secrets, but because of an error in the map, the secret's not actually reachable without clipping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember there was, I think it was a year or two ago, there was one where you had to lure one of the demons to this part of the map, and then you stand against the wall,
mm-hmm.
and it kind of pushes you through.
You know? There's another one like that they talk about in here.
Yeah, these people are like the ultimate Doom experts.
We got a couple more. I'm just going to kind of power through these. There is a 30th anniversary Sonic comic coming. All right.
That's about it.
Space Invaders is coming back as an augmented reality mobile game. that could go very, very badly.
The only reason I put this in the notes is because it's by Square Enix. So hopefully, hopefully they know what they're doing.
Maybe. I just picture people running around in the field, like, shooting up into the sky randomly. And Limited Run Games may or may not be doing a physical release of the Neo Geo Pocket Color Selection, but I assume this would not be on Neo Geo Pocket cartridges. This would probably be a physical Switch game.
Yes, yes. They're pretty much saying stop importing that stuff. So, I'm sure we'll report on it if or when it actually happens.
Yeah. Well, we were going to talk about Windows 3.11 because this is episode 3.11 or something.
Yeah, this is our work group's episode.
Is this time to confess I've never even run Windows 3.11 except one time at work to test the compatibility of something? Because I went from, as I mentioned last week, I went from Amiga 500 straight to Windows 95.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a downgrade.
It's close, man. Some things are Amiga better than Windows 95. Some things are worse. But yeah, I really, Windows 3.1, I've really only played with in virtual machines just to kind of kick the tires on it and then said, oh, well, anything you really want to do in Windows 3.1, you have to go out to DOS to do anyways.
Pretty much, yeah. So Zach also pointed out that about the time this episode, you'll be listening to this episode, is the 29th anniversary of Windows 3.1. And then we decided we should just do prime number birthday anniversaries.
Only prime number anniversaries. 31. Wait, is 31 prime? Yeah, I think so. Yeah. 31, 17, 11, whatever.
Yeah. I love it. So one will count also, right?
Oh, zero. Yeah, but I can't imagine we would be talking about things that are turning one or two or three or five or even seven.
But so... So we figured, yeah, we talk about Windows 3.1 for a little bit. So, yeah, just my quick memory on it is, so Windows 3.1, most people know Windows 3.1.1 because that was the free bug fix for 3.1. Windows 3.11 for workgroups pretty much just added the workgroups networking stack, which is SMB. And, it added protected mode. It added some multitasking capabilities. It added a few graphical enhancements in terms of speed and drivers and stuff. But it really finally was using the 386 like it should be, even though you could use 286. But it also introduced the Windows registry for good or for bad. And so, you know, it's a pretty significant piece of software history. And I have some pretty good memories on it. Oh, yeah, it also did TrueType. So it tried to compete with the Mac finally. But in terms of gaming, I don't have great memories with it. Now, we did do 3.11 game called Metal Marines a long time ago. That's also on the Super Nintendo, but... that's a cool game where you could kind of shoot missiles between windows. So that was kind of neat. But back when this got released, I was really into BBSs and I was running BBS. I thought, you know, what if I could just run that BBS in Windows so I could do some multitasking, even with a pretty, my computer wasn't that great, but I thought it could handle at least a BBS because how much processing power could that actually use? Yeah, people were immediately complaining. Mm-hmm. And then I switched. Have you ever heard to DeskView? A program called DeskView?
Yeah. Was it Norton?
I think it was its own thing. But it was like there was a few versions of DeskViews, and then there was DeskView X, which had a built-in X Windows interface, but it was pretty much a multitasking environment for MS-DOS, and it worked so much better for multitasking than Windows 3.1.
So I was thinking of like Norton Commander or something else. That's what I was picturing in my head. I've not seen Desk with a Q, Desk View.
But Windows 3.1 also got Microsoft in trouble for one of its first times where I had to pay out in court, where it would look at what kind of DOS you were running. Like back then there was DR-DOS, which is by Digital Research, I guess IBM DOS, and a few other kinds of DOS that were, you know, MS-DOS compatible. Windows, the beta version, would check if it was a real MS-DOS version. If not, it wouldn't run Windows. Mm-hmm. It would just give you an error. And so they were getting sued before they launched it. They didn't delete the code, but they disabled that function. And so that code is still in there. And I thought that was pretty interesting. But that went all the way to court regardless. But so...
So I think you can install it on... I don't know if they still have that check or not, but I think you can install Windows 3.1 on free DOS.
Oh, yeah, you can. And on DOSBox. That all works, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So,
they disabled that. Of course,
it would be easy
feature.
To, like, it would be pretty easy to just lie to Windows and say that you're not Dr. DOS or whatever, right?
I mean, you could probably, even in a hex editor, just make it always true, you know? Yeah, we just wanted to mention it that, you know, it has a birthday coming up at the same time we're at episode 311. So, yeah, that's about it. So, Game Club, huh?
Yeah.
Want to do yours first? I'm assuming it'll be a quick one.
Yeah, fairly sure. So I played Sega Rally Championship. I originally was going to play it on the Saturn because we were talking about another Saturn game. But instead, I played the Game Boy Advance version for no particular reason other than I was curious how they could possibly do that game on Game Boy Advance. Mm-hmm. And other than looking really blocky, it plays pretty well.
Nice.
It's fairly fast. It has most of the features of the original game. It's just really blocky looking. But the controls are good. It's like you could probably do a little bit better on the Game Boy Advance, but I don't think you could do a lot better. Mm-hmm. Definitely, like, if you pick this game up in, you know, 2003 or whenever it was released, you would not be disappointed by it. Some of the quartering, I usually went with the Subaru for no particular reason, and sometimes the cornering was a little hard, but outside of that, it steers well, and music's, you know, roughly the same music. I thought it was a good game all around. Cool. I did not have a copy of the arcade version anywhere to play, but I didn't look up the N-Gage version. I'm really curious how this could possibly run on the N-Gage.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I checked this out. I emulated this in RetroArch for Saturn. I think Beetle Saturn was the emulator. Mm-hmm. It ran fantastic. I am horrible at this game. Mm-hmm. Like you said, Korn. I didn't play it too much, so I just think there's... I'd get used to turning, but anytime I tried to go fast, I would kind of not be able to turn. And anytime I take my finger off the gas to hit those corners, I would just get passed. So I don't really know what I was doing wrong, but yeah, I feel like everyone that owned a Saturn had this game. Anytime I see a Saturn collection, this is in there.
Yeah. It's definitely like a mandatory Saturn game. Is how it feels. Sort of weird how that's evolved over time. You know, there's certain games that just everybody had, and they weren't pack-ins.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Top Gun for the NES. I feel like everybody had that game.
I agree. Yep. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of those kind of games. But yeah, I thought it was pretty good. I'm horrible at it. but... Yeah, how far can you get in, like, I forget what the modes are.
Oh, I just do practice mode. I just do, like, the regular, you're just doing a plain ride. I'm not trying to do, like, the world circuit or anything in there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm sort of curious, there is another game called Sega GT on the Dreamcast that I think is similar engine. So I did not try that yet, but I have a copy. I have to see if that works with VGA first, and then I may give that a try. Mm-hmm.
It should. There's only a few games that don't work with VGA.
Yeah, yeah. And some of them you can do like a disk swap or something, and then they work.
Weird.
Yeah, because it checks at boot. Basically, when the Dreamcast boots, it literally looks for like if you have a text file called like vga.txt or something on the root of the CD file system.
Huh.
Yeah, weird. It's a really dumb. It's just a single, like, there's nothing to it. So a lot of games you can bypass by just booting another game that has that file.
Huh. Weird. Any closing thoughts on that one?
No, it's all right. You know, I was expecting it to play a little bit more like Daytona, but it kind of doesn't. I thought for sure it'd just be like Daytona, but with off-road, but that doesn't really seem to be the case.
That's what I thought too. Yeah, but you are correct. Well, cool. I did a Saturn game that I played on Switch. I did Panzer Dragoon, and yeah, I got the remake. And this originally came out in March of 1995 on the Saturn. I guess it's post-apocalyptic. I don't know if it's Earth or whatever, but you use the technology of the ancients, which I guess are the people who did not survive the apocalypse, which is now post. And I guess you're some kind of hunter. This dragon is by you. The guy riding it dies, and he's pretty much, you're the dragon riding guy now. Go with it. Take this dragon. And there you go. You're flying around. It's a rail shooter. You're shooting other dragons and weird little things from in the sky. You could turn your camera with one of the buttons. It turns at like 90 degrees at a time, which is a great mechanic. And so you're shooting behind you. You're shooting side in front of you. And when you get, you know, past like level 4, you're doing this a lot. You're managing all three, you know, all around you quite a bit. And so when I booted this up on the Switch, apparently I didn't at first read the remake part of the title. So I was just like, oh my God, the graphics on this for the Saturn are just insane. How did the Saturn do this? And it's like, oh, okay, wait, yeah, that makes sense. They up-resed and they swapped some textures.
Yeah, well, but I thought they didn't even have the source code. I thought this was like a from the ground up remake.
I don't know. Apparently it plays exactly the same. There is a modern mode, which I tried and did not like. So in the not modern mode, like just on the Dreamcast, when you move the D-pad, not only does the dragon you're riding, you know, move around the screen, but also your target of what you're going to shoot stuff with. In modern mode, those can be independent. And I actually did not, I thought I would really like that because I always want stuff like that. You know, like when Mario 3D All-Stars came out, I thought they should just have modern controls. But anyway, with this, I don't think it worked. So I went back to the regular version, and I thought it played great. I really like this game. I thought there was going to be more of a story to it, meaning I thought it was going to be RPG-like, but it really wasn't. It was more of an arcade-type game. And
Are you thinking of the later Saga game?
I could be. And every time you get through a level, depending on how good you do, you get a credit or more. So if you die, you can continue. So it really feels like an arcade game, but you also save your game so you could start from there as well. And it doesn't seem like a very long game. I did not complete it. I think I'm on level 6 or 7, something like that. But this is pretty much on... I mean, this is PlayStation 4, Steam, Switch, Xbox, Saturn, Windows, PS2. At least some of the games are on PS2, at least one of them. But I would definitely recommend this game. What do you think about this one?
Yeah, so I played it on Saturn, and it's a fun... it's one of these games I like for, you know, one or two levels. It's fun. The camera on Saturn can be a little bit annoying at times. But it plays really well, and like it's sort of weird. Where, like the levels are fairly, you know, they're challenging, but I wouldn't describe them as hard. But then the bosses are just, for lack of a better term, damage sponges.
Yes.
Like by the time I get through the second boss, I just don't want to play the game anymore. The first boss, you know, takes quite a while to beat, but then the second one is just, it's just brutal.
And there's no auto fire. Yeah. My thumb was sore.
Well, yeah, and you have to shoot them, it seems like, over 1,000 times. I really don't think I'm exaggerating. It's just insane how much damage the bosses take. So it's pretty impressive on the Saturn. I mean, if you haven't played that version, it's a really, I say a lot of Saturn games don't age well, but this one really has. It looks good. The music's still pretty solid. Mm-hmm. Overall, I mean, I like the game. I just don't usually play it for more than one or two stages.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think a lot of arcade-y games like that are like that, you know? So, but yeah, I definitely give it a two thumbs up. I can't wait for the next one. I guess Panzer Dragoon 2 Zwei.
2 Zwei. 2-2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is going to be remade as well. So have you played the Saga game? I have not played that.
No. Now, that's like one of the rarest Saturn games. Mm-hmm. Now, that's like a, you know, if you have a loose copy that like your dog chewed on, it's like $600 on eBay.
Jeez. Yeah. Yeah, because that was a 98 release. Pretty late.
Yeah, Saturn was discontinued in 98. You know, at that point, even the most dedicated Saturn holdouts had to move to N64 or PlayStation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure, you know, you, me, we've all been the holdout of a system that was just not going to make it.
That was TurboGrafx for me.
Yeah, Turbo CD, yeah.
Yeah, the Duo, yeah.
But yeah, at some point, you're like, all right, had some good times. Time to go buy the Super Nintendo, I guess.
Yes. Yeah, for me, I went from TurboGrafx to PlayStation 1.
Okay, that's a good upgrade.
Yeah, that's a big upgrade. Well, cool. What are you going to play next, since we have kind of a Windows 3.1 theme for the next game club?
Yeah. So if we planned ahead, we'd be doing it for this episode, but
yeah,
we don't believe in planning ahead. Since you said pick Windows 3.1 games, I picked Minesweeper, because it's the most Windows 3.1 game I can think of.
Absolutely. It definitely is. I've had many hours with that game. And I'm going to do Sim Earth, because I heard there was a good version for Windows 3.1. So, I mean, Sim Earth is on everything from like Turbo CD to, well, Windows. So any port of it.
Yeah. I've tried the Turbo CD version. I have no idea what I'm doing in it. So
I'm sure it'll be the same with all the other ones. If any of our listeners, have any comments on the news, have any memories of Windows 3.1, have played any of these Game Club games, anything retro, any cool projects, please, we'd love to hear from you. Email at retrogameclub.net. That is email at retrogameclub.net. Or hit us up on Facebook, facebook.retrogameclub.net, or on Twitter at RGCpodcast. And we have some emails here.
Yeah, I can take the emails if you. I don't care. I mean, I will butcher them the best I can. Stanley talks about Road Blasters. He says it's a really fun game. Whenever he sees it, he always plays it. And once you kind of get good at you know the mechanics, you kind of get into a groove with the game. You know what I'm talking about, where like you're sort of in the zone and you know tuning out the whole world and just cruising along. That's kind of what he's describing here. He said he likes a lot of the bonus weapons. But obviously the nuke is the best, and you can use the shock weapon to destroy the black indestructible cars. Mm-hmm. He actually played it on the Lynx 2 for the podcast.
Wow.
Yeah. But he said they have it over at Robot City Arcade in Birmingham, New York. And it was also at a fun spot. And then back in the late 80s, he feels like every bowling alley had a Road Blasters cap.
I definitely would agree with that.
Okay. I've not been in a bowling alley in a long time, man. I don't really know how to bowl, but, you know, I have kids, so you go once in a while. But Road Blasters gave him a book idea. Road Blasters, Mortal Kombat, and a few other arcade games had mail-in offers for shirts, comics, patches, whatever. Some pinball games had it, too. And he wonders if the owners of the current P.O. boxes still get mail for these old offers. And
I have a story about that.
Okay, good. I won too, but yours is going to be better, I predict.
I don't know. Well, in, it must have been like 93. I was taking guitar lessons in the Detroit area. And the guy that taught me in this music store, would always go to these record collector events. I don't know, conventions. And so every once in a while, he'd bring stuff in he thought I would like, and I would buy them from him. Usually, I actually learned a lot about of cool bands from that. But at one point, he had an original unopened 1979 Star Wars soundtrack record. And okay. I just loved it. I never opened it. And then finally, in like 2004, 2006, something like that, I opened it up. And there was a, hey, send a check to this address to get a Star Wars t-shirt. And, you know, so you cut out this thing, you put an envelope, you put a check in there, and you send it. And I was like, oh, am I going to get this cool retro Star Wars t-shirt? No, they just sent it all back to me. Oh. So I ruined the thing because I had to cut out this thing in, you know, I devalued it. So I immediately regretted it.
Yeah, there was no chance that was going to work.
No.
Yeah, see, I was thinking about this too, because a while ago I scanned and posted the Turbo Gear catalog. It's a little leaflet that came with some TurboGrafx games where there's a bunch of like fluorescent merchandise, like t-shirts and footballs for some reason. Mm-hmm. There's a backpack, not as much a backpack, but like a gym bag that's like neon green, just tacky.
I remember that thing. Yeah, I remember that.
Horrible, tacky, glow-in-the-dark things. But the P.O. box for that is like 5 miles from me. Like, it's really close. So, like, every summer when there's garage sales, I'm always driving around that area. I do at least one weekend a summer. I go through there whenever there's like big neighborhood garage sales in that area, hoping that maybe in some warehouse or someone's garage is like all the leftover Turbo Gear merchandise.
Yes. Oh my, I would drive out for something like that for sure.
So the closest that I got to a score like that was not too far from there. There was someone who, like, they must have managed a few McDonald's franchises because they had Happy Meal display inserts. You know, when you walk into McDonald's, there's the case that has, like, the Happy Meal toys.
Yeah.
The kind of semicircle case. And there's, like, an insert with art and stuff. They had a yard just with hundreds and hundreds of those. The inserts That's cool. and the toys, yeah. So I grabbed the Star Wars ones for my wife. They did not have any video game ones, unfortunately, or someone had already bought them before me. But it was a pretty amazing find. And I guess, unfortunately, the guy had like just died or something, and his wife was selling all these inserts that he'd accumulated over 30 years of running McDonald's's. So, yeah. But anyhow, so getting back to Stanley's email, this would be kind of a fun project, like trying to, this is like if I won the lottery project, I could maybe go in on something like this, you know, because I would have free time of going to track down these old things and see where they are today.
Totally, yeah. It'd be a great book.
Mentions about Audacity Games, hoping that it helps encourage further game development and releases more homebrew games for retro consoles. Mm-hmm. And then encourages us to check out Blazing Rangers, coming out for the NES Famicom soon. We should put a link to this in the show notes.
Yeah, absolutely.
I did not see this. The title sounds like a game that would have been released in the 90s for sure.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like a TurboGrafx game.
And then let's see. Majors writes in. I'm wondering if I'm trolling him with the pronunciation of Halco. And I'm not. It just looks like the name of a restaurant, and that's what I always call it, I guess. It does note that in some games, they do pronounce it at the boot screen. And it is pronounced Jalico. I don't know why. I don't know why it looks wrong to me. In terms of network bandwidth with the PS Go, he has a bit of a funny story about how he was one of the last people on Earth using the old 54 meg per second router and could not upgrade his cable box because of it. Actually, had to upgrade to the shiny new AC-1000. Yeah, see, modems is the kind of thing I upgrade often, just because it's such a huge quality of life improvement when you get a faster modem.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Adventure skill levels. I think I said there were 5 levels, but there are really just 3. Actually, I think there's like, I think I was referring to the fact that there are multiple difficulty levels too. I think there's 5 different game variations in Adventure, but maybe there's 6 now that I think through. Road Blasters. Yeah, he was a big fan of that. Also reminds him of a better version of Spy Hunter. He said he mostly plays it on the Lynx. Okay. Hmm. That Lynx version must be good, because that's 2 in a row now that have said they play the Lynx version. And then Katamari, very much enjoys the aesthetics and the music. He has run the Japanese release at some game events before the North American one came out. And everyone who played this import, because it was not out in America yet, absolutely loved it. That's makes cool. Sense. I guess we asked a question on social media about longest time to beat a game. And he mentions Phantasy Star 4. He bought it in late 95 or 96 and finished it in 2018.
Nice.
And just this year, he finished Victory Run for the TurboGrafx, which he first played in 1989.
Not a great game.
It's okay for the time.
Rad Racer existed.
Yeah, people compare it to like Outrun, maybe, I guess. I think it's all right. And then someone also named Rob shares a project with us. Did you get a chance to look at this?
Yeah, this is it's a virtual pinball table. This is like a blueprint schematic 3D rendering thing right now. But if you're really smart and talented, you can make this. It's a virtual pinball table that also converts into a sit-down arcade cabinet. So if you scroll down in this link, the pinball table part just kind of flips over and a chair flips out. Really cool. Really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is a really neat project. So we've got to put that in the notes. And then we were asking people, where in blank is Carmen Sandiego? And I feel like we did this before. But I think we asked this question before, didn't we? Because at least one of these responses looks familiar.
I like the flat earth one.
Now, we're in flat earth domes. We're in the capital of Djibouti, which that's actually the correct name. Like, that's not a joke. Like, the capital is also called Djibouti, so it's confusing. So you have to call it out. I don't know why I know world capitals that I don't live anywhere near. It's just lots of useless information. So, yeah, email at retrogameclub.net if you want to chime in on anything we've talked about on the show or something that you would like us to talk about on the show.
Absolutely. Yes, please. And also, if the audio sounds different in any parts of the show, after we did the intro, I realized my computer wasn't recording. Now, I record in like 3 different spots now, so you might not notice anything, but just in case you notice audio changing after, that's why I flipped audio sources. So there you go.
I mean, consistency isn't really like our greatest value, you know, like
consistent. Well, we consistently never research our games or topics.
Yeah, I'll probably that might change a little bit. Like I don't think I'll research the history of Minesweeper or anything. Not there is much of one. Sim Earth, I'm sort of curious what they were thinking, because when I've tried it, it just really puzzles me. Like, I don't really understand what you're supposed to be doing in that game. Like, you're trying to create life or something, right?
I don't know. I've played every version of Sim City, but Sim Earth, Sim Ant, Sim Tower never really caught my attention. Okay. So I'll tell you next episode.
All right. Yeah, Sim Tower I like. I like the premise of Sim Tower.
Sim Ant? But
Sim Ant I do not care for the premise of nearly as much.
No.
All right. Well, I guess we should probably run. So thanks for listening.
Yeah, thank you.